Tell him I'm coming.
You're too late. Hell's gonna walk the earth.
Hell already is walking the earth.
He broke out of hell to make things right.
He was a good father.
And got mixed up with the wrong crowd.
Now, he's got one last shot at redemption.
That cult
killed my daughter and took her baby. I am going to get her back.
Thought you were dead.
You hoped I was dead.
But the devil's right-hand man wants to bring him back.
I'm looking for someone. 6'1", angry with attitude. If you don't tell me what I want to know.
Miles of hard road.
Now that's a hell of a ride.
Just so you know, I don't pick up hitchhikers.
I didn't have my thumb out.
Oh, yeah.
We got a fight coming.
That baby girl's all I got.
My whole life has been nothing but waiting, and now it means something. I'm with you until the end. Oh, yeah.
You can't stop me.
I am going to kill you.
Between now and then, I'm gonna mess you up. What kind of gun is that?
You think there's anybody in there?
I won't see you again until you're 73. You I'll see in 3 months.
What the hell does that mean?
Drive angry, shot in 3D.
Wouldn't want to be you when Satan finds out.
What's he gonna do? Not let me back in?
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing just great.
That's
cool. How are you, Mike?
I am doing great. Doing great. A little tired, but you know, we're pulling it together. We're doing right. We're gonna talk about a really interesting movie today, I think, Mike. Based on our text conversation the other day, it seems like we both have very different reactions to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this should be fun. So I think in order to put this movie into context, we need to discuss the resurgence of 3D. In the 2010s.
Okay.
Yes. Obviously, 3D existed in the 50s, found some more success as a gimmick in the 80s, but it slowly made a comeback throughout the 2000s. There were a few animated films here and there. There was weird one-offs like Spy Kids 3D, Game Over, you know, things like that. And then Avatar happened, right? James Cameron's sci-fi epic became the most successful movie of all time. And while it's true that everyone and their mother saw the movie, the thing about it was that you had to see it in 3D. Like, if you were going to see Avatar, there was no way you were going to, like, skip and go see 2D, right? Like, the 3D was the talking point.
It was pointless to see it in standard.
Exactly. Because it had used the format like no movie ever had. It was aiming for depth of image rather than just things popping out at you. And the reaction was immediate. I mean, every studio blockbuster had to be in 3D for a couple of years. You know, even the ones that were supposed to come out really soon after Avatar. The early 2010s saw a lot of terrible 3D post-conversion jobs, like Alice in Wonderland, Clash of the Titans, and The Last Airbender, which were not filmed with the format in mind, so all the 3D did was muddle the image and make it look worse. It also doesn't help that all those movies were terrible, but still.
You know.
But the 3D was really bad in those movies. The movie we're about to talk about today, 2011's Drive Angry, was actually shot in 3D and kept the format in mind.
What? Sorry.
You seem shocked by this, Mike.
Oh, man, what a twist. I was not expecting that to be where that was going.
You thought this was post-conversion?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, yeah, this was actually shot in 3D, and it kept the format in mind during every step of the filmmaking process. They even advertise on the poster and in the trailer that this was shot in 3D. It says the words, shot in 3D, even though the average moviegoer had no idea what the difference was between being shot in 3D and a post-conversion. But Drive Angry didn't exactly follow the Avatar model. using 3D as a way to convey depth of field. No, Drive Angry is very much in the gimmicky, shit pops out at you mold. which also saw a resurgence around this time with horror, specifically with horror movies. There was Piranha 3D, My Bloody Valentine 3D, and the last two Final Destination movies. Now, I saw Drive Angry 3D in the theater on opening weekend with my two friends, Mike. I was 17 at the time. You have this knowing look, like, obviously Mike saw this movie.
I'm so not surprised.
I was 17 at the time. We were the only ones in the theater on opening weekend. And if you want to peek into the mind of teenage Mike, I actually saved this because it popped up in my Facebook feed a little while back. That, you know, how Facebook does the memories and stuff like that. Right. I joined Facebook in 2011. I believe it was 2011. Or maybe it was a couple years before that. But at the point is, all I had then was Facebook. So all I really used it for was movie reviews and song lyrics. So
exactly like you do now.
Yeah, but with Twitter.
Okay, yeah, fair.
Now Facebook I just use for pictures. That's basically it. But an old Facebook post came up. And it said this: Drive Angry 3D is advancing the art of cinema in ways we can only begin to conceive.
Oh my God.
And you know something, Mike? I stand by that statement.
I can't believe that was your review. I'm so glad that happened.
Because here's the thing. Regardless of whether you think Drive Angry is a good movie or not, it is without a doubt one of the most insane movies that Nicolas Cage has ever made. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, you know? That's a bold statement.
And it still blows my mind to this day that a major studio put this one out in wide release. how was this allowed to exist? I don't know. Supposedly, one of the major reasons Cage was drawn to the film was the chance to work with the then-emerging 3D technology. He wanted to be on the cusp of something really cool. But he also, this is true, really, really wanted to do a scene where his character's eye gets shot out.
What?
That's a scene that happens in this movie. His character's eye gets shot out. Apparently, there was a similar scene that was supposed to be shot for Season of the Witch that ended up getting cut so we could get a PG-13 rating.
Wow.
So this gave him another chance at redemption for this eye shooting out thing. That was one of the main reasons why he took this role, which is an interesting bit of side trivia. Also, according to IMDb trivia, Cage wanted to shave his head for this role and have a full head tattoo, but he was talked out of it and put on another bad wig. Now, the movie was written by Todd Farmer and Patrick Lussier and directed by Patrick Lussier. The two of them had previously worked together on another gimmicky 3D horror movie, the My Bloody Valentine remake from 2009. Farmer was also the writer behind Jason X, aka the one where Jason goes to space. And Lussier had also made Dracula 2000, in which Gerard Butler played Dracula. I don't know if you remember that movie.
I do remember that.
Okay.
Oh, wait. No, I don't, actually. I'm thinking of the more recent one.
Oh,
Dracula
Untold?
Untold.
With
whatever,
Luke Evans. Yeah, that was like 2014. This is back in like 2000. He also did the direct DVD sequels, Dracula 2 and Dracula 3. He also used to work as an editor for Wes Craven. Did a lot of his movies throughout the 90s and stuff. And though he has not directed a movie since Drive Angry, he was the co-writer of Terminator Genesis, which was terrible. So,
whoops.
So there was that. Now, Nicolas Cage stars as the lead character, Milton, which, you know, we've had a pretty good run of, like, badass Cage names, and for a character that is as badass as Cage is in this movie, I feel like Milton is kind of a disappointing name.
Well, it's John Milton is his name, and that's a reference to Paradise Lost and Paradise Found. John Milton's the guy that wrote that, so, like,
okay.
It's not a badass name by any stretch. And in fact, it's like a really on-the-nose naming. We're going to make a movie that sort of deals with demons, and the main character is named for the guy that wrote one of the most famous demon books of, like, English literature, so...
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
That's fine. We're going to make a really intense play. Main guy's name, Billy Shakespeare. Like, that's what this is. Like, that's what they're doing.
This movie is nothing if not on the nose, so that makes sense. And I'm glad we have you on the podcast, Mike. That's what your English degree is kicking in right there.
Hey, I used it one time. It's been 3 years. It's fine. I'm not salty about it.
Anyway, Milton is a dead man who breaks out of hell to save his kidnapped baby granddaughter. He teams...
Is that what this movie's about?
What did you think it was about?
No, I'm kidding.
Okay, all right. He teams up with Piper, played by Amber Heard, who I think is fucking awesome in this movie. And she took the role because she got to swear a lot. That was her whole reason.
Yeah, that's fair.
The great character actor William Fichtner, who's probably best known for his role in Heat, but who also appeared in Armageddon, Go, and The Dark Knight. He plays the accountant, a demon, trying to recapture Cage. Also fucking awesome in this movie. The film's villain, Jonah King, is played by Billy Burke, known for playing Bella Swan's father in the Twilight movies. David Morse plays Webster, Cage's old friend, and Morse was also in The Rock, so there's a Cage reunion there going on. Katie Mixon from Eastbound and Down. She was also in Mike and Molly and the new show American Housewife. She plays Norma Jean, a waitress at the beginning who works with Amber Heard. Charlotte Ross from Days of Our Lives, NYPD Blue, and who I recognize as Felicity's mom on Arrow, plays Candy, a waitress who Cage ends up having sex with in the movie's most memorable set piece, and we'll talk about that later. And then you've got Krista Campbell as Mona Elkins, who also played a truck stop waitress in The Wicker Man. Pruitt Taylor Vince plays Roy at the Bull by the Bar, the Bull by the Balls Bar. That makes another Cage reunion because he was also in Wild at Heart. Plus, you've got character actors like Jack McGee and Tom Atkins appearing as Fat Lou and Police Captain. And by the way, Tom Atkins is the Police Captain. Also awesome. Tom Atkins was in The Fog. He's also in Halloween 3. And he dives into the Police Captain role. He's basically channeling Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive, and it's awesome. And Michael Papajohn plays a small role as Tattooed Guy. Now, you may remember him as the guy who kills Uncle Ben in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's that. Or from his chain of pizza restaurants.
Hey, bazinga.
Papa John, all right. And finally, co-writer Todd Farmer also appears as Frank, Piper's shitty fiancé who gets beat the fuck up a lot. Now, the movie came out on February 25th, 2011, 2 years after My Bloody Valentine. As you can imagine, it did not do super well at the box office. Since it was a film made for me and no one else, on a budget of $50 million, $50 million was the budget for
Jesus
this movie.
Jesus Christ!
This made $28 million overall in the U.S. It opened at number 9 at the box office and holds the distinction of being the lowest grossing wide release 3D film.
Wow!
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's something. It's something, all right. And there was only one other major release that weekend. So if you weren't seeing Drive Angry, you may have been seeing Hall Pass, the Farrelly Brothers comedy starring Owen Wilson and Jason Sudeikis about guys who try to cheat on their wives, which opened at number 1 that weekend. It's a damn shame. This should have been number 1 with a bullet. But the IMDb plot synopsis for Drive Angry reads: a vengeful father escapes from hell and chases after the men who killed his daughter and kidnapped his granddaughter. Now, Mike, I think we have very different opinions on this movie. So I'll start with you. What were your overall thoughts on Drive Angry 3D? Or just Drive Angry, I guess, because we didn't watch it in 3D.
Right. So I really struggled with this movie. I wanted to like this. I think this movie has so many aspects that are a lot of fun and encompasses a lot of genres and touches on things that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, it's got horror elements in that, it's about demons and the guy from escaping from hell, and it's a revenge movie. It's basically an exploitation movie.
Yeah.
Right? It's like things that if I saw the version of this made in 1976, like, I would be all about this movie.
Okay.
But there is just something about Drive Angry and that makes me just, like, repulsed by it. In some weird... I don't know how to say it. I think it's the big studio version of it, right? These kinds of exploitation movies are supposed to be, in air quotes, right? Typically, are gritty, are low budget, have practical effects, are goofy but earnest. This movie doesn't check any of those boxes for me.
Okay.
There's just big green screen, silly stuff, but Cage, we'll get to later, his performance didn't really work for me.
Really?
His choices compared to the performances of Amber Heard and the guy that's the accountant whose name I can't remember that you just said,
William Fichtner,
like, their performances are much more in line with the genre and tropes of what goes on in these movies, and it just didn't really mesh with Cage for me in this. So just not, the pieces were there, they just didn't come together in a way that I enjoyed.
Okay, interesting. Well, I feel no shame in saying that I think Drive Angry is still fucking awesome.
It's totally fair.
You know, and maybe it's because I had that experience seeing it in the theater. I feel like it does lose a little something when you're not seeing it in 3D. When you're watching it in 2D, like, a lot of this movie is designed to be watched in 3D. There's shit popping out at you in the screen and stuff. But when you're watching it in 2D, it's just, it's not doing that. you know.
Yeah, on my 30-inch screen.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
You know, and those effects, like, don't look good when they're not in 3D. And they don't really look that good in 3D, but they're not really, like, supposed to, you know. They're supposed to look, like, kind of cheesy. But, yeah, I did actually write down, like, because I knew you weren't a big fan of this movie, or I figured you weren't, but I did write down, like, if this were made with a budget of $5 million in 1988 and played during a horror movie marathon at a cheap theater, you'd go apeshit for it.
Yo, like, exactly, yeah. Like, I would be all about this movie.
Right, but I kind of love the idea that, like, a major studio put $50 million into this. Like, there's no reason they should have done that. You know?
You're right.
It was such a waste of funds. Like, I get it, and I love that about it. but I feel like this is a movie that knows exactly what it is and what it wants to be, and everyone involved seems committed to making it exactly that. You know, it's paying homage to those, like, exploitation movies of yesteryear, but doing it on a much more massive scale. It almost feels like Grindhouse to me, like Planet Terror or Death Proof. Definitely not as good as Death Proof. Honestly, I'd probably put it on par with Planet Terror.
That's a slam dunk on Planet Terror.
I Planet Terror is a lot of fun within the context of Grindhouse. I think by itself, it's still fun. It's just not as good. That's my hot take for Planet Terror. Death Proof is awesome, though. But yeah, I feel like this is about as good as Planet Terror. And it kind of does the same kind of thing, where it's, you know, paying homage to those crazy exploitation movies, and it's kind of going way more over the top than those movies actually went. You know, but it's doing it so in a really fun way. This is in line with the Machete movies and stuff like that. Hobo with a Shotgun. I feel like there was this weird resurgence of, like, not really big budget, but, like, you know, bigger exploitation movies in the 2010s.
I would even put Crank in there.
Oh, right? Hell yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what this movie evokes, all that stuff, but just, it didn't click for me, which is so weird, because I love all those other movies.
This film has a very sort of grindhouse, hard-edge sensibility to it. Were you looking to do a project like this?
For a long time, I've been trying to figure out how I can get to be a part of the 3D format, and that was one of the main reasons that attracted me. I wanted to be a part of this new rage that was happening, and Patrick Lussier was really the pioneer of it. What he did with My Bloody Valentine, and then James Cameron with Avatar, I think, started this thing. And so I wanted to see what I could do with that, on top of which the movie was really the kind of movie that I would enjoy going to see, so it was a really sincere expression. I like movies that deal with, that are absurd, that have a lot of adrenaline and action to them, but I also like movies that have a horror or a science fiction effect to them, and Patrick is certainly a maestro of that.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, again, like, the CGI, not good. The CGI is very bad, and, you know, it's definitely because of the 3D. Like, they were going for the 3D effects and stuff.
Right.
But that, I feel like that almost adds to the cheesiness of the products for me, which is what I love about it. You know, when you watch like, one of those old 80s 3D movies, like, they look bad, right?
Yeah, the shark in Jaws 4 doesn't move.
Jaws 3.
3D. Duh.
Right. Yeah, Jesus. Every third movie in a franchise in the 80s was in 3D. We all know this.
Yeah. Friday the 13th.
Yep, Friday 3D. The 13th 3D, Jaws 3D, Amityville 3D, it's all there. Those are the three. And
I mean, that's every movie in the 80s,
that's
right?
All of them, right? I think we just covered all of 80s all over. They can shut off that podcast now. Plus, you got to remember, the 3D in this movie was great. Like, if I had a 3D TV, I would have pulled out all the stops to watch this movie in 3D. Also, I mean, I just love every character in this movie. Every single character is the coolest badass motherfucker on the planet. You know, Cage is a badass. Heard, super badass. Fichtner, amazing in this movie. He actually won, the Fangoria Chainsaw Award for, like, Best Supporting Actor or something.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
So there's that. I mean, and, you know, Fichtner had been a great character actor for such a long time. And I remember when this movie came out, I was, like, excited to see Cage in this kind of movie. But I was more excited to see William Fichtner tearing it up. Because, like, he was somebody who, you know, I loved in Heat. And, like, I loved his opening scene in The Dark Knight and stuff like that. And so I was just so excited to see him get this huge role and just nail it. And what I love it, like, this movie opens with a monologue about badass motherfuckers.
Since the birth of time, humanity has endeavored to restrain evil men in prisons. But since Cain fled the murder of his brother, evil men have fled the walls of punishment. So it doesn't matter if you're a badass motherfucker on the run because you think you're better than everyone else and somehow entitled to do what you gotta do. No. Because you see, badass motherfuckers are never fast enough. In the end, they will all be accounted for.
And it does not let up in the badass motherfucker department. That's the entire movie. And I love that about it. You know, I feel like, you know, a 17-year-old, like, again, watching this movie. But yeah, and the, you know, there's a ton of action scenes, and I think the action is inventive and totally wild, often pretty supremely fucked up, super violent, and I think it's also often, like, a really funny movie. I think there's a lot of, like, dry humor and stuff, plenty of shit that's in bad taste, but I think plays perfectly for the kind of exploitation movies this is emulating, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm also a big fan of just the soundtrack selections, the on-the-nose soundtrack that begins with, that starts off with Raise a Little Hell. As soon as the movie starts, you hear Raise a Little Hell, and it's like, yep, this is the movie. And then it ends with a song that it started playing, and I was like, wow, this sounds like a Meatloaf song. And then I looked it up, and it was a cover of a Meatloaf song, and I was like, yep.
What song was it? Was it Bat Out of Hell?
It was off Bat Out of Hell 3, actually. So it was the song's called Alive, and it's an awesome song, actually, but it's Bat Out of Hell 3, which is not the Bat Out of Hell album that people go to.
I mean, it would have been the one in 3D, though.
That's true. Good point. But I thought it was a great song, and, like, super fitting for the scene that it was ending on, so, like, it was a cool choice. But then there's just, like, weird selections throughout. I love Amber Heard's, like, singing a song about fucking or whatever as she's driving, and, like, William Fichtner's, like, doing the driving along to That's the Way, I Like It, as he's, like, mowing down people, and it's great. So I love the soundtrack of this movie, too.
I agree. Yeah, it definitely adds to that, like, goofy exploitation mid-80s movie that this would have been, and I would have loved.
Okay, so we'll talk about Nicolas Cage. I mean, so his performance didn't work for you in this movie, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think the issue for me is that Cage is, everyone else is overacting and, like, hamming it up for this kind of campy mid-80s style of movie. But Cage is trying to do Snake Plissken, and he, like, can't do it, in my opinion.
Okay.
Where, you know, he's just this, like, steely-gazed, unfazed by anything, badass motherfucker, right? Like, that's what we call, the movie tells us he's that.
Right.
So he must be trying to be one. And I believe it in the action scenes and stuff, you know, the opening scene when Cage runs, you know, flips that car over or whatever. And
right.
He
shoots the guy's hand off and all that.
Yeah. And he tells him, like, tell him I'm coming or whatever. And he blows the dude away or some shit. And I was like, yeah, this is pretty rad.
Right.
But everything else, just Cage is just total deadpan. And it didn't fit the rest of the movie. And I didn't buy him as that stony badass motherfucker character.
Okay.
So it kind of, I think that's where my issue is this, the piece of the movie didn't gel together enough for me to be on board.
So you wanted more like crazy Cage, like over the top kind of Cage kind of thing?
Yeah. I think if he was hamming it up and he was going insane, like Face Off Cage, I'd probably love this movie.
Interesting. I mean, I think, sure, I could always use more crazy Cage, but I think he's awesome in this movie. Like, I think he's, you know, totally, like, I think Snake Plissken's a great comparison. He's totally cool, like, stoic, badass. He's also got a very dry sense of humor, which I loved. He's got, like, the one-liners and stuff like that. I do think he's only, like, the third best performance in this movie, because Amber Heard and William Fichtner just, like, dive right into their roles, and they're great. But I think Nicolas Cage, like, brings sort of a gravity to that role. You know, he has a couple of dramatic moments that I think land for me, but also, like, I think he anchors the movie in a way. Like, he's the central performance. Like, if he was going fucking nuts, I feel like there wouldn't be anything to compare the actual insanity surrounding him in the movie.
Okay. You know, it would just be bonkers all the way, and that'd be it.
And I feel like that'd be too much. It would be like when, you know, how in Pirates of the Caribbean 4, Jack Sparrow became the main character. Right,
yeah.
So the first three, like William Turner and Elizabeth Swann, are the main characters, and they're, like, the normal they're, like, the normal people, but then Jack Sparrow's, like, the side character bouncing off the walls and stuff, but then when the fourth one came around, Jack Sparrow was the main character, and, you know, Johnny Depp's doing his stupid, like, insane thing, but then the rest of the movie's also, like, a big, crazy Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and nothing works, because there's no contrast between, like, the main characters and the craziness surrounding them, I feel like Cage is grounding the movie with his performance, and by doing so, allows the insanity to fly. And I think it works pretty spectacularly for me. And I just love a lot of dynamics about his character. I love the cat and mouse game that he and William Fichtner have going on. Because he's basically, like, William Fichtner is kind of just doing his job, and he's, like, kind of amused by the whole thing. But also Cage is kind of annoyed by it. So, like, none of them are, like, super invested in each other. They just, like, know they just know that they're both around.
Yeah, you know? They're like, I just kind of have to do this.
Exactly.
I don't really care.
Yeah, and you know, this I call this a cool guys don't look at explosions kind of performance.
oh my god, which, that's the perfect way to put that.
Because in the first 5 minutes, you see Cage put on sunglasses and walk away from an exploding car, and it's like, all right, there it is.
Here we go.
And I feel like that's exactly the kind of Cage you get. And yeah, I feel like there was a couple of other movies. I remember there was other Cage movies where he doesn't really go crazy over the top and they don't super work for me. I feel like Con Air is a movie where, you know, Cage is doing some silly stuff, but he's being very, like, kind of dour almost. He's being very, like, stone-faced. And I feel like his performance in that movie doesn't necessarily work for me, but I think that's part not because of the nature of the insanity versus his performance. I just feel like he doesn't really give that much to that movie. Also, has a weird accent and stuff like that, so
kind of throws it off,
right? Or something like you know, Firebirds also is another example where like Cage is trying to do the stoic badass thing, but I think he got better at that over time. And I think this is the movie where it really comes together for me. That stoic badass Cage.
You're not wrong. I agree with everything you're saying. it just didn't land. Yeah. I don't know.
That's a bummer, man. I mean, if you can't appreciate Nicolas Cage having sex while smoking a big cigar and drinking a bottle of whiskey and then getting into a gunfight, like, without stopping, like, this might not be the podcast for you. This might be where you have to get off.
Colin, I'm going to tag you in. yeah, I don't know. That, like, even that scene, which is hilarious, was just so fucking weird. And I know that's the point, and, like, right. I get it. I get we're having a sex scene and a gunfight at the same time. But I think the line right before that, when she says, like, why don't you fuck naked or something.
Yeah.
And he says, baby, I never disrobe before a gunfight. And then they kick in the door and, like, shit goes off.
You mean the coolest line of all time?
AFI top 100 movie quotes, number one.
Yeah,
baby, I never disrobe.
It goes, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn at number two. And then number one, I never disrobe before a gunfight, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, baby. Why does she fuck naked?
I never disrobe before a gunfight.
Oh, yeah. I know that you
but it's just so, I don't know, like, I think normally I would love that. I think this might be a movie that if I saw with a group of 20 rowdy people, like, I would probably have a lot of fun with.
Okay.
But by myself on my 30-inch screen, like, I just didn't care. I haven't done a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should definitely, you know, stage a 3D screening of this movie somehow. Like,
yeah.
I will buy a 3D TV so we can watch this in 3D.
Email the Draft House.
Honestly, they would probably put something like this on. I could see Justin at the Yonkers Draft House doing, like, Drive Angry 3D. It would be great. Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far, Mike?
This movie, I can't believe I'm saying that it made me yearn for Face Off Cage.
Well, I mean, Face Off Cage is perfect, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, that's fair. but honestly, obviously, the connection to Ghost Rider, right? Demon, satanic, badass out of hell thing.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage plays a guy associated with the devil, fighting a guy associated with the devil, and at one point he drives a vehicle that's on fire. This is the movie I wish Ghost Rider was.
yeah, pretty much. But it also sort of reminded me, I don't know if reminded me isn't the right way to put it, but thinking of Big Daddy, right? Big Daddy.
Kick-Ass.
Well, yeah, sorry. Kick-Ass. Sorry.
Big Daddy's an Adam Sandler movie, so I just wanted
I realized we're not doing that podcast yet. Stand by for Complete Work Season 3. Where we do Adam Sandler.
Yes.
But where that's the kind of, I think that's the performance I was sort of looking for.
Okay.
Where it's this kind of a little bit hammy, a little bit goofy, but also pretty serious and intense, right? I think as we talked about when we reviewed Kick-Ass.
Sure.
So yeah, it brought up that for me, but I think that's sort of it on the surface level.
Okay, I think it's interesting you bring up Kick-Ass because he is a supporting role in Kick-Ass, you know, and so he's bringing up the wackiness and stuff like that. But again, he's you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in Kick-Ass, but it's kind of all anchored by like Aaron Taylor Johnson's performance, where he's kind of playing just a normal guy, you know. So I think you know Cage gets to be that crazy insane guy in that movie because he is like very much a supporting character, whereas this, he is the main guy. And I feel like when in most of the movies where Cage plays a super insane character, not all of them, but I think most of them are usually supporting performances, like Deadfall. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. like Deadfall would be... I mean, it's already insane as it is. Can you imagine if Nicolas Cage was the main character of that movie?
Don't worry, it'll happen soon.
Oh yeah, Arsenal, coming up in 2017. Well,
when we get to the Deadfall sequel, the secret sequel.
Yes, so that'll be fun. That'll be interesting to check out. But I do think it's interesting to compare this movie, actually, to the one we just reviewed, Season of the Witch, which Cage viewed that movie as an homage to Hammer Horror and Roger Corman Pictures, because this basically does the same thing, but dives right into the insanity and campiness, whereas Season of the Witch does not. That's a very, like, stoic and boring and, like, drab movie. This goes all in and just, like, fucking insanity at every turn.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting to think of that. It's like the next decade, right? Like, the Season of the Witch homages the 60s, kind of early 60s horror movies, and this one, we're sort of in those, early to mid-70s grindhouse exploitation movies.
Right, yeah. And these movies came out, like, a month apart, too, which is kind of interesting. And I was watching it, and I was thinking to myself, like, is there a more insane Nicolas Cage movie than Drive Angry? Like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, the things that happen in this movie... are pretty fucking wild. Like, there are a few that came to mind. Like, Vampire's Kiss, obviously. That's an insane movie. Deadfall, sure. Bad Lieutenant, maybe. Knowing. Maybe Raising Arizona or Wild at Heart, but, like, in, like, a different way of insanity. Like, those are, like, you know, a different kind of crazy. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like just what Cage does in this movie and everything that happens around him in this movie, I would be hard-pressed to name another one that is as insane as Drive Angry. Possibly Vampire's Kiss. If there's going to be one... I think it's Vampire's Kiss. But Drive Angry, man, I mean, that big sex gunfight is just...
We're never going to top it.
Yeah, like, that to me is like an early peak in Nicolas Cage's 2010s, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that in terms of just insanity on a plot level, this is the craziest movie we've talked about so far. And probably, I don't want to say that because I haven't seen the next 50 movies we have to review. Or whatever it is. Yeah, it's bonkers. And I guess in terms of just... I think you're right, Vampire's Kiss is probably the... Or maybe... I think Deadfall... they're both pretty fucking crazy.
Well, Deadfall is only, like, really nuts. I mean, it's nuts, but, like...
Deadfall's weird.
It's also super weird. And Cage is only really in it for, like, 40 minutes, right? Is that sound about right? Because then he dies, like, two-thirds of the way through the movie, and then it's
he gets deep-fried.
Yeah, he dies in a deep fryer in that movie.
Which is pretty on par for what happens a lot in Drive Angry.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That is a top-five insane Cage moment, for sure. But then, like, the rest of that movie... I mean, there's crazy shit that happens. You know, there's Charlie Sheen in a red devil suit with the... And there's the guy with the robot arm for no reason and stuff like that.
Robot lobster claw.
Lobster claw. But I don't know, man. Drive Angry is a movie where, they have these chase scenes. They have William Fichtner playing, like, the sidekick of the devil who has, like, this flipping coin that, like, turns into an FBI badge. And I think that's its only power. And then it... and then he, like, uses it to kill, like, two dudes. And It's wild, man. I mean, this movie's great. I want to give some love to William Fichtner right now because, holy shit, he's so good in this movie. I love everything about this character where he's just like this... he kind of represents like the bureaucracy of everything that's going on in hell and stuff like that. He's just some suit who, like, devil sends to go do a job to retrieve Cage after he breaks out of hell. And
that's more of an homage to Seventh Seal than anything that happened in Season of the Witch.
Yeah, no, it totally is. and the accountant is awesome. Like, I think the way William Fichtner is playing this role, just the way he, like, does the line readings, he's playing, like, if this was the early 90s, this would be the role Nicolas Cage would be playing, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Like, he's doing, like, a William Shatner impression at times, I feel like, almost, where he's, like, kind of just taking, like, weird pauses in his lines and stuff like that. There's the one line where he has, he's talking to Fat Lou and Katie Mixon's character, and he calls Fat Lou Fat Fuck, and Fat Lou, like, looks back at him, like, what'd you call me? And he's kind of commenting, I was like, fat fuck, unless you want to be called dead fat fuck. something along those lines. And he's on that level the entire movie.
About fucking time I called you guys, like...
There was a traveler.
6-1.
What?
Ah, yes. The traveler. Angry with attitude.
Some bitch kicked me in the... Who are you?
I'm the accountant.
I called a cop.
Some bitch. Where did he go?
The fuck should I know? I woke up and all three were gone.
All three?
The bitch, the some bitch, and my car.
What kind of car?
Look, Hugo Boss, you ain't no cop. Me ain't no talking.
What kind of car, Frank?
What?
Your car. What kind is it?
Why does everyone keep hurting me?
Answer.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with his character, and you know, it emphasizes the inhumanness of what of his, you know, character, the way that he just kind of goes through the world in these weird rhythms and stuff. But like, also, it's just really goofy and campy and fun.
Right.
It's so great. You know, that scene when he is grooving out to "That's the Way I Like It."
Yeah.
While just blowing through all these cop cars and stuff.
Yes.
And then, like, steps out of his car, out of the truck, onto the hood of a car as he drives past it and, like, closes the door in sync with the music and stuff. Like, it's so funny. That scene was great. I love that.
Yes, that was so good. And then, the police captain comes up to, like, "Who the fuck are you?" And he, like, flips up the coin, brings up the FBI badge. It's like the Federal Bureau of "Get the Fuck Out of My Way." And it was great. I also want to give some love to Tom Atkins as the police chief also, because he, I think, dives into the role. I mentioned before that he's channeling Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive. And he's only in a couple of scenes, but like, he enters in with just wearing like this big t-shirt with movie spoilers on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got like "Snape killed Dumbledore" and like "I am your father" and stuff like that. But then like later on, after they're on the road, they find out that Cage and Amber Heard have killed two of their cops. So they like have a roadblock and set up. And like the way he just is delivering his speech to his cops, where he's like, "When I say aim for the tires, what I mean is aim for his head. You guys got all that? Yes, sir. Now what are we going to do? Aim for his tires, sir." And it's like, I don't know. I just love the way he dived into that role. You know what I mean?
"Gentlemen, these two have killed two of our own. I know you want to make the pay. Therefore, when I tell you to aim for their tires, what I mean is aim for their heads. Are we clear?"
"Yes, sir."
"Very well, then. Please, aim for their tires."
Yeah, yeah, and that's my sadness about this movie. Everyone else is on 10, and Cage is just on, like, 4.
I don't think he's on 4, though. I feel like he's doing really good work here as that stoic, okay, Snake Plissken badass. Because he has these, just the way he delivers these lines, the way he, like, says, like, you know, he has this, like, big dramatic monologue about wanting to kill Jonah King. And then Webster offers him a beer, and he's like, "I'm not going to have a beer. Not unless I'm drinking it from Jonah King's skull."
Yeah.
Right? And like, that's such a goofy line, and I feel like he sells that so well. And then later on in the movie, he does drink a beer out of Jonah King's skull, and I was like, yes!
Yeah, I did appreciate that payoff, where he somehow pulls a Shinerbach out of nowhere.
Well, he was in like an alternate hell dimension or something. They probably just
that's fair.
They got stuff there.
It reminded me of Wayne's World, where he just like all of a sudden has a Doritos bag.
"Contractor, no, I won't bow down to any corporate sponsor."
Yeah, exactly.
So good. I also wanted to talk about Amber Heard, who I think is great in this movie. And you know, I feel like she hasn't gotten like a ton of great roles throughout her career. You know, I can't think of like a definitive Amber Heard movie or anything like that. You know, I know she's going to be in Aquaman. So there's that. I think she had a cameo in Justice League also, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But who can remember that movie? That was so long ago.
So many lifetimes ago.
I know. But she is super badass in this movie. I think she's great. She's like a super strong female character, like super sex positive and super, you know, just violent and like ready to fight at like every turn. And like, I loved watching her in this movie. I thought she was awesome.
Yeah, the scene when she kicks the shit out of her boyfriend for cheating on her.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, so good. So good. And then, like, Cage beats the shit out of her boyfriend, and then the accountant beats the shit out of her boyfriend. It's pretty great. Yeah, and then the way he kills the fiancé, actually, was also really funny. Like, the way, like, he just throws him with the, he, like, impales him with the bat, and then the way the fiancé reacts, it's the co-writer of the movie, Todd Farmer, and he says, like, "Oh, why does everyone keep hurting me today?"
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
This is really like pathetic line reading, which I love. And then like Fichtner like stabs him in the head with a bat, and it's great. Then there's like the big chase. There's a couple of big chase scenes in this movie too. There's a big chase scene between Nicolas Cage and William Fichtner, where he first pulls out the God Killer, which was cool. Did you enjoy the God Killer in this movie, Mike? Did you at least enjoy that concept?
As a concept, yes. And I was totally down for it the first time when they used it in that car chase on the bridge there.
Right.
But then when it gets used at the end, it's just like looks so bad. And I was so disappointed in what the effect is of it. Like, it's just these, like, it's like you sort of see writing in it, like in the like star trail of it. And it's just so, which is cool. Like, I was down for that. But it's just so, like, the effects are just so bad. And they like firework into the air.
I mean, I feel that. I feel like the effects are bad. But I also feel like it's not that the bad effects are intentional, but I feel like they add to the movie. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
For this kind of movie, I feel like having those bad effects like isn't the worst thing in the world. You know, if this was something like, just to throw like a random blockbuster out there, Pacific Rim Uprising, right? If Pacific Rim Uprising looked like that, yeah, that would be bad. You know?
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
I would be upset if Pacific Rim Uprising looked anything like Drive Angry. But because Drive Angry is Drive Angry, I don't know. I feel like they look fine for me. They look good within the context of this movie and what this movie is trying to be.
Okay.
So there's that. Then there's the other big chase scene on the highway with Jonah King, where Cage comes back from the dead after he gets his eye shot out, which was also great.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about it is like he gets his eye shot out and he's down for like a couple minutes, and then he comes and he like sits back up, kills everybody in the church, and leaves without so much as like, you know, acknowledging that his eye got shot out.
Yeah.
You know? Like that doesn't come till later. And it's actually a pretty cool moment where he's like, I can still feel the bullet in his head. That kind of thing.
I also read that one of the appealing facets of you was the chance to get your eye shot out.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that's about. I know on Season of the Witch, which is a movie that I'm also very excited about, I tried to get the producers to shoot my eye out with a bow and arrow. But they didn't want to do that. So when Patrick, why wouldn't they want to do that? I just still to this day can't understand. But in the first 10 minutes of my meeting with Patrick, he volunteered that my eye would be blown out with a gun. And I went, I'm in. That's it. It might have something to do with some sort of ancient Wotanic philosophy.
So deep.
9 days on the Yggdrasil.
I'm sure there's some symbolism there, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's the big chase scene on the highway where Cage is chasing down Jonah King and his guys. Meanwhile, Amber Heard's also fighting Jonah King on the bus, and it's great. I think Amber Heard has an awesome like fight scene in there. She has a great line where Jonah King is like, you know what? I'm not going to bring you into my church. You're a lost cause and stuff like that, I'm going to kill you. And she's like, says like, well, between now and then, I'm going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
And then she grabs the Pentagon that's on his chest and stabs him with it, which was great because that happened in the flashback earlier where Cage's daughter did the exact same thing. And I'm like, dude, stop wearing that pentagram.
Yeah.
People Why keep stabbing you with it.
A knife-sized pentagram on your chest. Like, what are you doing?
The worst possible place for you to wear that. Yeah. And yeah, what else? Then there's the big like finale, right, where Cage drives into Jonah King's compound. Basically, we should talk about Jonah King's plot in the movie, where he has killed Cage's daughter. He brings Cage's daughter into a cult, kills her, kidnaps the granddaughter, and intends to sacrifice the granddaughter in order to bring Satan and hell and demons to get all back onto Earth. Right? That's his.
Right.
He's basically the head of a crazy cult and stuff like that. And at the end of the movie, Cage finds Jonah King in Louisiana, and there's the big cults going on. There's a big party with naked people and dancing and stuff like that. And then Cage zooms in with his fire car, kills a bunch of dudes, and then he tries to shoot the God Killer, and he hits some other guys. And that guy's fucked. It's like, goodbye, that guy. And then Amber Heard ends up shooting Jonah King with the God Killer, and then he explodes in a big wormhole CGI explosion death scene, which, you know, is a bit of a twist. Because at that point, William Fichtner decides to help out Nicolas Cage, right? It seems like the curiosity has gotten the better of him. And he's like, all right, well, we can like let this slide, I guess, and like let it happen. And it seems like, you know, the way you assume the entire movie that the God Killer exists so that it can take out William Fichtner if need be. But then by the end, it takes out Jonah King, and I thought it was satisfying. I thought it was a fun scene. Again, like it's bad CGI for sure. Does not look
atrocious.
Good. Does not look good. But I don't know. I really dug that. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did think that final scene was that, or that final set piece is so fun. The monologue he's giving before he is about to sacrifice the baby is just, like, the best dumb, like, cult, like, cliche kind of stuff.
Yes.
Like, you know. And he's, like, shouting it and overacting and hamming it up.
Yes.
And then you hear, like, the roar of the Hemi engine that they keep talking about throughout the movie.
Right.
or the 440 or whatever it is. I can't remember. And then, he Dukes of Hazzard into the compound. And, like, that stuff was fun. And, like, that big shootout is fun. And, I like the action in this movie. I will definitely say that much. That stuff is fun. And then he gets, like, blown up. And I'm like, all right. I mean, like, it was cool. Like, it was climactic and silly, but I was just the bad CGI took enough out of me. Took enough of the movie. Took me out of the movie? I can't.
Took the movie out of you. The movie was part of you, and now it's no longer.
It was the fifth element the whole time, and now it's not.
Yes. And then after that whole sequence, Jonah King dies, and then Cage dies as well. But he kind of passes his granddaughter on to Amber Heard and tells her to take care of her. And so he does, and they have like a moment together, and then Cage disappears along with William Fichtner into the Hell Dimension, and they're like, yeah, I guess she doesn't know you can't kill a dead guy.
Yeah.
he and Fichtner have kind of like a moment where Cage is like, you know, I don't intend on staying. And Fichtner's like, Cage?
Yeah.
Cage!
Don't you dare.
Don't you do it. And then they drive back into hell together and they play the cover of Meatloaf song. And I think it's such a blast. I have so much fun with that sequence. I think we've covered the main points of the movie. I feel like we didn't talk enough about the big sex scene.
Okay, that's fair.
I feel like we really got to dive into that. So
let's break it down frame by frame.
Frame by frame. The movie basically does that because a lot of it's in slow motion.
Slow motion and 3D.
And 3D. Man, I cannot stress the experience of seeing that sequence in 3D on opening night in a theater with nobody else in it except for me and my two friends.
You and your 17-year-old friend.
Yeah, it was like a religious experience almost.
I'm sure.
You know? That sequence, starts off Candy, Felicity's mom from Arrow. She, is a waitress at the bar, and she sees Cage, and she starts hitting on him a little bit. And then Amber Heard is like, hey, you should have some sex and stuff like that. You might want to tap that. And then she leaves, and she, like, grabs a guy and, like, brings him up to her room. And then it cuts to that, and the guy is completely naked in Amber Heard's room. They're not having sex. He's painting her nails. Yep. And that was a pretty funny moment where she knocks him off the bed, which was pretty good. Then it cuts over to the room next door where Cage is having sex with Candy. She's completely naked. He is fully clothed.
Yep.
And it's like it's rough sex that they're having. They're going at it. And then it cuts away and Jonah King and his men start coming into the building and stuff like that. And then it's cuts back to the room and she's like, why don't you fuck naked? And he's like, 'cause I never disrobed before a gunfight. And then as soon as he says that, the door swings open and Cage pulls out his gun. And again, he is smoking a gigantic cigar at the time, holding a bottle of Jack Daniels, uses his other hand to grab his shotgun and start blowing motherfuckers away. And he never drops the cigar. He never drops the whiskey. He keeps having sex.
Yeah, doesn't drop the girl.
And it's an elaborate, like, 5-minute shootout where all those things are happening at the same time. It's wild, Mike. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, I agree. I think that scene is a marvel of modern cinema.
It's advancing the art of cinema in ways we can't even begin to conceive, Mike.
That's correct. Yes. I like to imagine that. Think of that scene, but also think of all the behind-the-scenes stuff you saw about Avatar, where it's like them in a soundstage with all the dots on them,
but
it's Nick Cage and a naked woman with all the dots on them. It's just like they're in one of those things because that's what it looks like. Like it's just the camera is like spinning up around them 360 degrees and doing all these crazy movements.
Dude, seeing that in 3D, revelatory experience. Like it gave Avatar proved you can do a lot of cool things with 3D. Sure, didn't have that though. It didn't have that.
At least not in the theatrical cut. We don't know.
That's true. I don't think I've seen the extended cuts. Maybe it's in there. But anyway, yeah. So that's, I mean, that's the big sequence that I think, like, when I went back to watch Drive Angry this past week, because I didn't remember a ton of the movie, but I remember that sequence very vividly, and it was the one I was very excited to see again. And it did not disappoint.
Pretty amazing how you're able to engage in a shootout and yet still maintain focus on your partner.
Yeah. That whole scene really only works because of Miss Charlotte Ross. I mean, she went for it and did it in such a way that was sexy, but more than that, it was really kind of heartbreaking and tragic, and where she goes by the end of it is really pretty incredible to watch. We were pretty nervous at first to do that scene, all of us involved, because I didn't know which way it was going to go. But by the end of it, we were all celebrating, and it went very quickly, and we had a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken together. And it was
like
good,
you do.
Like you do after a scene like that. I just wanted Milton to be like this, without talking too much about my character. You know, he just broke out of hell, and, you know, he's a living dead man, and was into all the vices. So the cigar had to be going, the Jack Daniels, the sex. And, of course, he couldn't get undressed because he knew he was about to get into a gunfight and didn't want to, you know, do it nude. So that's
what was
going on. Sequel. Right. He still has a moment for a sip of Jack Daniels.
Yeah, in the middle of all that. That I like that moment.
But anyway, are there any other scenes that you wanted to bring up, Mike? Anything that stood out to you, or should we move on to Netflix reviews?
I think we covered pretty much the whole movie at this point.
It's not a super complex movie.
No. We can move on to the user reviews.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. I mean, Drive Angry 3D, movie that I really, really enjoy. And I'm definitely in the minority on that one. It did not get great reviews, and it did not make any money. And barely anybody has seen it, but, like, it's a movie that I really, really love. And people should check out. If you like Nicolas Cage, I think this is a great movie to watch. And obviously, Mike disagrees. But that's fine. It's okay to be wrong sometimes, Mike. It's cool.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad you support me in this.
All right, here's the Netflix reviews, Netflix and Letterboxd reviews for Drive Angry 3D. Here's a one-star review. Most of these are one-star reviews, I'll say that. I'll say that.
Thanks.
Here's a one-star review. It is incredibly hard to fathom that somebody could make a movie this indescribably terrible. Nicolas Cage now seems to have risen to the top of a genre that it seems to easily dominate. That genre can only be labeled cartoonishly ridiculous, lowbrow, demon possession revenge with really inane dialogue film.
It's pretty spot on, yeah, actually.
After he followed the two Ghost Rider films with this one, he seems to be the undisputed king of the genre. I will say that the man is undoubtedly working hard at his craft because, good lord, it seems that a person would have to put in some serious effort to produce a steaming pile of tripe that emulates a Hoover vacuum cleaner as much as this film does. The only good thing I can say about this film is there were some really cool cars in it.
All right.
Yeah. Which, that reminds me, actually, cool cars reminds me, one of the stoic badass Cage performances that doesn't totally work for me is Gone in 6 Seconds. That's another one that I was thinking of, trying to think of and couldn't. There's like one cool, like, cagey kind of scene in that movie, but the rest of it is just Cage kind of being the badass, like trying to be the stoic badass. Not super working for me. I feel like in this movie it really, really works. For me anyway. Here's a one star review, once again, of Drive Angry. Can't Hollywood make a movie anymore without all the nasty words?
Hey!
So many movies I cannot, or rather will not, watch. This was one of them. Good story, but I only watched for a few minutes, then put the DVD back in the folder and sent it back. Makes you feel like you've been cheated out of a movie.
You know, it's been a while.
I think they came in the last episode, Virgin Years. Or at least...
Temperance Virgin Years.
Temperance Virgin Years. Maybe it was on the Kick-Ass review, I'm thinking of.
Yeah, probably.
But, yeah, and I think this made me think... I'd be really interested in seeing, like, a PG-rated cut.
Oh my god.
Of Drive Angry. Would it be, like, 10 minutes long?
The TV cut? I mean, if they could make Snakes on a Plane,
True.
It'd be one of those things. This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps.
Exactly.
But with Nick Cage stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Here's a one-star review, once again, of Drive Angry. There are bad movies, terrible movies, and then there is Drive Angry. What a terrible movie. It is hard to believe that Nicolas Cage once won an Oscar for Best Actor.
Wow.
Amber Heard, really hot, but what a terrible actress she is. This flick is like a Terminator version, but instead of gladiators coming from the future, this time they come from hell. Yes, it is that stupid. It is really sad to read some 5- or 4-star reviews saying that it is a great action movie. I guess this is why the world is so messed up. people have lost all kinds of values and morals and their brains, too. If you think this is a good movie, you should at least agree that you have serious issues. And you need to be checked out immediately.
That got really aggressive at the end.
Yeah, it did. Did get a little aggressive. Oh, by the way, do you know where the name Drive Angry came from, Mike?
No.
Okay, well, you'll notice that Amber Heard's license plate in the movie is Drive Angry.
Yes.
Which I thought it was funny that was her license plate and not Cage's license plate that was... Drive Angry. But actually, if you look in the... I was watching the credits of this movie, and in the special thanks section, it thanked Bill Murray and Punxsutawney Phil. And I was like, huh, that's weird that they, like something to do with Groundhog Day or whatever. And I looked it up, and the title Drive Angry actually comes from a scene from Groundhog Day where Bill Murray is trying to kill himself. He has, like, a groundhog with him. And he's driving, and he's saying, don't drive angry, don't drive angry, don't drive angry.
Wow.
That's where the name of the movie came from.
Interesting.
So that's pretty cool. Anyway, back to the reviews. Here's a 4-star review of Drive Angry. Drive Angry, this is actually a really long one, so I cut it down to like the first 3 paragraphs.
Jesus.
They're short paragraphs. Drive Angry is like getting hella wasted at Chili's on Thursday night because you don't have anything to do on Friday except go to TGI Fridays, get hella wasted to burn off the remnants of the Chili's bender and extinguish the remnants of the deep fried appetizers, something jalapeno stuffed or whatever. Drive Angry is like buying pre-distressed Buttrick t-shirts at Target to go with your pre-distressed jeans also purchased at Target to wear to your big night out at Chili's to get hella wasted and order too many appetizers, which you hope not to lose prematurely in the Chili's bathroom. Drive Angry 3D could very well be the movie you go see at the multiplex in 3D post-Chili's, pre-TGI Fridays, and try not to pass out or barf again, even as the stupid glasses give you vertigo and make everything seem like you are on the verge of blacking out, even if you are not. You got blue cheese ranch dressing all over your new old-fashioned regenerated classic Buttrick tea, making it that much more distressed. Honestly, I think that's the perfect description for
Holy shit. I've never heard a more amazing review of anything ever.
Right? All right, here's another one. Here's a 4-star review of Drive Angry. My God, Amber Heard, a spectacular-looking lady. She could be my favorite. Sadly, Miss Heard is outshone here by the real super sexy star of the film, Nick Cage's hairpiece.
God.
What a stunner. I'd like to have it over to my place, cook a risotto, have some wine, maybe light some candles, have a real nice time. Ridiculous, bloody, brains off, actually full-on lobotomy required. Fun.
Okay. I appreciate that one.
Yeah. All right. And finally, I got one more. Here's a 1-star review of Drive Angry. Nick Cage escapes from hell to rescue his granddaughter from a satanic cult who killed his daughter. That is a really awesome premise, right? Just me, then? It's impossible to comprehend the ridiculousness of a movie such as Drive Angry, so I'll just list a bunch of crazy shit that ensues. Here it goes. A man gets nailed to a wall with a baseball bat. Cage drives a car while it's on fire. A guy slashes his head with his own sword. He drinks out of a skull. He has a massive shootout while carrying a naked stripper. And above all, the incredible ridiculousness of this movie. Wait for it. Cage gets shot in the face and doesn't even give a shit. Now, surely, if you're taking a movie called Drive Angry seriously, then you're probably deluded. But if you're like me, who goes into this almost brilliant garbage for a barrel of laughs and for some wretched effects, then this may just be the movie for you. Nick Cage is one badass motherfucker.
All right. I feel like you guys might have convinced me that this is a good movie.
Did we?
Maybe. I don't know. I gotta watch it again, but like with people.
You should. I had not seen it since it was in theaters, and I still had a blast with it. And I was watching it by myself. Like I thought it was so much fun.
But you had the nostalgia.
True. Yeah, I had the nostalgia of seeing it in the theater for the first time, so maybe there was a little bit of that going on. But I still think this movie is just such a ridiculous time. And like it's not a movie that I would call like great in terms of like, you know, this isn't a, you know, it's not the Godfather.
Good movie.
It's not, it's, you know, it's, I always hate, like, I hate when like reviews like supersede the review with something like, well, it's not Citizen Kane, but you know, it's a fun turn off your brain. Like, it, you know, it doesn't have to be Citizen Kane. It's a totally different beast. You know, this is a complete grindhouse exploitation movie. I think it does a great job of being that, you know what I mean? And yeah, I wish there was more like practical effects and stuff like that. I'm with you on there. Like, that would be cool if it like evoked that a little bit more. But for what it is, man, I think this movie's a blast. And yeah, I guess that's about that about wraps it up, Mike. So where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter, as well as our podcast and stuff at filmbook.com. Plus, you can listen to WPDH and WRV. I host some radio shows there. You can find me on Instagram, Radio Mike Sandwich, all that stuff. I'm just going to plug everything I do from now on.
Yeah, apparently.
Might as well. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, you know, about the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, where we're talking about a somewhat significant film in Cage's filmography, Mike, in a way, because this is the first of what will be several Cage films that went straight to video on demand.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. It's 2011's Trespass, which reunites him with his 8mm director, Joel Schumacher. So that should be terrible. Looking forward to that.
Isn't, like, Nicole Kidman in that?
She is. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, Nicole Kidman was in that, too. I have not seen that. Looking forward to seeing that. Always down for a Schumacher joint. Am I right?
Amen.
Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we're either talking Incredibles 2 or Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom pretty soon. We don't really know what we're doing yet. Depends on what Mike sees, because I'll probably see both this weekend. I've heard mixed things about Jurassic World 2. There's that. I've heard pretty good things about Incredibles 2. So, I'm looking forward to reviewing either one with you. Either way, I'll probably be able to talk about both on the podcast. But I do think it'll be really fun to review Jurassic World together, just because...
You just destroy it.
Yeah. I mean, if I like it, I'm going to defend it. I've heard some people... Okay, I've seen some people say it's actually... There's some really well-made sequences in the movie, and that it's still super dumb, which makes me think it's going to evoke the Lost World more than anything else, which, like, I'm kind of down for that. Like,
all right.
You know, and I know you're a big Lost World fan.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so we'll figure out which one we're going to review soon. But until next time, thanks for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.